Good morning, and welcome back to the Breaking Borders podcast. My name is Adriana, and I am the host for today's episode titled Confronting Borders. In today's episode, I have Kamzi here with me to answer a few questions that our audience has from his paper. How are you doing today, Kamzi?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on today.
Okay. Alrighty, first question for you is going to be from Katie.
In your paper, you describe the forming of the Ku Klux Klan as a result of racial tension felt across Texas after the abolition of slavery. Do you think that if law enforcement and the state had stepped in to help curb racial tensions by prosecuting people who murdered African Americans, like Southerners and the KKK, that racial tensions would not have been so great between both groups? Or do you think that law enforcement stepping in would have inflated these tensions?
I believe that even if law enforcement were capable of punishing offenders in the KKK, there would still be racial tensions between the whites and blacks in the South, but to a lower degree, as violators would have been forced to take accountability had they been prosecuted justly for the murders that they committed.
Good to hear that. Now to Lauren's question.
In your paper, you state a quote from General Reynolds saying that the members of the KKK cannot be punished by the civil courts until some examples by military commissions show that men can be punished in Texas for murder. Why do you think there had to be so much proof of the murders, even though everyone else knew who was behind committing these murders? Do you think the people in power that were also in the KKK did this to keep themselves from getting caught for their actions?
Yes, I touched on this in my paper, and this has to do with the fact that the borders that separated the classes in the South, affluent white men in positions of power were able to fuel the actions and crimes committed by the KKK, which oftentimes included themselves, as they were able to make stories and concerns disappear easily with the connections that they possessed in those positions of power.
All right, next up we have the question for Shauna.
In your paper, you talk about the men in positions of power in counties where the KKK was active. You stated that these men were part of or supported the KKK, therefore leaving their murders and crimes to go unpunished. Do you believe that in society today that the people in power are biased when it comes to their viewpoint on certain circumstances? Do you think that their viewpoints divide us and create social borders in society?
Yes, even in today's society, we see numerous occasions where our leaders and the people in power make decisions based on a personal bias. The issue with personal biases is that they're hardwired into our brains, which cause strong clashes when threatened or opposed by somebody else.
Thanks for the answer, Kamzi. Now we have a question from Connor.
Yeah, so throughout your paper, you state that Texas was constantly pushing to be individual from the federal government. Why do you think that the citizens of Texas wanted to be individual rather than combined with the overarching power of the federal government?
In my opinion, I believe that the main reason for Texas seceding from the Union was due to slavery. Texas was a big cotton-picking state and relied on the unpaid labor of African Americans to support its economy and industries. The Confederacy and its existing states were advocating to keep slavery, which aligned with Texas's goals and appealed to it so much so that Texas decided to join efforts in an attempt to achieve this common goal.
Alrighty, now we have Kobe.
Expanding on Connor's previous question, why do you think that Texans were so eager to secede after they had seemingly requested the U.S. to annex them less than two decades prior to the Civil War? Do you think it was purely because of slavery and economical reasons, or do you think there were other motivations for Texas to leave the Union?
While I do believe that slavery was the defining factor for Texas's secession from the Union, I do not believe that it was the only one. Another factor that I believe played a role was sectionalism, in that the ideals and values of the Confederacy lined up more with Texas's own than the Union's did, which aided a prompt to change state for Texas.
Alrighty, now to Clayton.
What role do you think bias played in all of this, and how much of a difference did it make? It could be the people in power had bias that carried through because of their power, whereas the other side of the argument still had bias, but no power to really make a change. How much did bias affect us?
Biases create strong-minded individuals, which can always lead to clashes due to differences in opinion. It is especially a daunting task when you are faced with a bias backed by people with the power to ensure that their side of the story comes out on top. Thus, a lot of times we are only left hearing one side of the story, or rather not grasping the full picture due to the biases in play.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. Thanks for that response, Kamsey. I think the next question is from Grant.
Yes. Can you think of any examples of conforming to borders in today's Texas?
One can say that Texas is still conforming to the borders separating classes. Regardless of race, the wealth disparity between classes in Texas is still continuing to widen, which separates the people, providing some with resources and some without it.
Next question is from Jack.
When discussing the political borders after Texas's secession, you use a quote from the young Elizabeth Custer. What kind of emotions do you think Custer and the people her age were going through during this time of significant change in her youth? Do you think they were anxious about the new Confederate rule, or more so proud to be part of such a historic event?
As with any war, there are going to be mixed emotions when it comes to those involved. Custer seems to express that she felt a wide array of different emotions during this time period in her life. And based on the excerpt we are given, we can say that she harbored emotions of anxiety with so much uncertainty surrounding the war, and patriotic emotions when she highlights the necessity of the war and her support of it.
Brianna, I think you have the next question.
Okay, in your paper, you emphasize how the Ku Klux Klan created borders between races. Do you think these borders still exist even after the Ku Klux Klan ended? And if so, in which way do you believe these borders exist?
Yes, I do believe that these borders still exist today, even after the abolishment of the Ku Klux Klan, as it sowed seeds of hate and indifference to anyone not a part or with them. Those seeds are still able to be passed on generationally, which results in these borders still existing long after the KKK.
Alrighty, so this leads up to my question, and it's, during that time of age, how do you think people that experienced slavery overcame those social borders?
I think they were able to overcome the social borders by coming together as one and standing up in union for the rights that they deserve. It also required a certain amount of individualism, where those oppressed took it upon themselves to spark and incite the changes that they wanted to see come to fruition.
Alrighty, and the last question for today is from Zach.
In your paper, you talked a lot about the KKK. What do you think allowed these groups to obtain so much power? And what do you think continued to keep these groups functional for so long?
I believe that the reason the KKK were able to have such a long-lasting impact on southern states is due to the fact that oftentimes members of the KKK included men in positions of power in their local governments and authoritative departments, which allowed for the injustices being committed by the KKK to go unchecked for many years. This lengthened period of violence and terrorism to minority groups sowed roots deep in the social infrastructure of Texas and many states in the South, which is cause for some of the racial tensions still experienced today.
Okay, that's all the questions we have for today, Kamsey. Thank you everyone who came out and asked the amazing questions to our author. Thank you, Kamsey, for being willing to answer the questions so well. Thank you to our wonderful and faithful listeners. We hope you will stay tuned for the next week's episode, Breaking Borders, where we'll be discussing Adriana's paper.
Our team here at Breaking Borders Podcast would like to thank our audience for coming out and asking these questions to our guest author. We would also like to say a special thank you to Dr. Fletcher for providing us with the readings that were featured in this week's podcast. Also, we would like to thank our guest author one more time for being willing to come out and answer these questions on this week's episode. Make sure you tune in every Friday as we will have a different author talking about their take on the borders. That's it for this week. Thanks for listening.